Picture a world where the people who own companies no longer run them, where wealth doesn't guarantee power, where a new class of professionals, neither owners nor workers, quietly assumes control of everything from factories to governments. This wasn't science fiction when James Burnham published his analysis in 1941. It was prophecy. George Orwell drew heavily from these ideas for 1984, recognizing something profound. The future wouldn't belong to capitalists or workers, but to managers. Today, as corporate executives shape policy, technocrats dominate governments, and expertise trumps both money and democracy, Burnham's vision feels uncomfortably prescient. Both Steve Bannon and progressive critics cite his work, recognizing a shared reality. We live in a world where technical control matters more than ownership. The question isn't whether this happened, but why we didn't see it coming. For centuries, one economic system dominated the Western world. Money generated profit, markets set prices, property rights were sacred, governments stayed small. The bourgeoisie, those who owned the means of production, held power, their dominance justified by ideologies of individualism and progress. Since World War I, this system has been unraveling. Persistent unemployment, despite technological advancement, debt spirals that never resolve, markets requiring constant government intervention, these aren't temporary setbacks. When millions show no enthusiasm for defending democracy, when capitalists themselves lose faith in free markets, we're witnessing symptoms of a dying order. We assume capitalism is permanent because it's all we've known. The collapse isn't coming, it's already here. Many believed socialism would inevitably replace capitalism. Workers seizing power, abolishing private property, building a classless society. The Russian Revolution seemed to confirm this vision. Yet, Russia evolved oppositely, creating sharper income stratification than America, history's most extreme autocracy, and nationalism exceeding the Tsar's. The crucial experiment failed. Eliminating capitalist property rights didn't produce socialism, but something else entirely. Elsewhere, the pattern repeated. Germany's massive Marxist movement surrendered to Hitler without resistance. Workers proved unable to take power, even when armed and facing collapsed states. Meanwhile, a new middle class emerged, salaried executives, engineers, managers, bureaucrats, whose existence Marx never predicted. These weren't capitalists who owned production, nor workers who labored. They controlled production through expertise rather than ownership. Socialism didn't fail because of bad leadership. History was moving in an entirely different direction. Throughout history, ruling classes maintained dominance through production control. Feudal lords controlled land, capitalists controlled factories. The bourgeoisie's rise reveals how power shifts. They didn't overthrow feudalism through confrontation, but built power gradually within the existing system, expanding control over commerce, banking, and manufacturing while feudal structures remained intact. By the time feudal lords recognized the threat, capitalists already controlled society's economic foundations. Two factors enabled this transformation: devastating European wars that broke feudal military power, and new ideologies, Protestant theology and Enlightenment philosophy, that undermined feudalism's moral authority. The bourgeoisie rarely fought directly, instead financing mercenary armies and patronizing intellectuals who did the actual fighting and theorizing. Workers attempted to replicate this success, but faced a fundamental obstacle. They couldn't gradually build economic power within capitalism. Unlike merchants, who accumulated wealth within feudalism, workers possessed virtually no property rights to build upon. Trade unions improved welfare without fundamentally altering power structures. Intriguingly, many early capitalists emerged from the feudal ruling class itself. Forward-thinking lords adapted by investing in trade and manufacturing, effectively transforming themselves, a dynamic that would characterize the managerial revolution as capitalist families adapted to new corporate structures. We're witnessing a transition from capitalist to managerial society, happening faster than the centuries-long shift from feudalism to capitalism. Managers are achieving dominance not through ownership, but through indispensable expertise. Corporate executives run companies, while shareholders passively collect dividends. Technical specialists keep modern systems functioning. Bureaucratic administrators navigate regulatory complexity. The economic framework rests on state ownership of major production instruments: factories, transportation, communications, finance. Managers exercise control indirectly through their command of the state that owns these instruments. The state becomes the property of managers, giving them ruling class status through operational control rather than legal ownership. The ideologies expressing managerial interests haven't fully crystallized, but approximations exist. Leninism-Stalinism emphasizes central planning and technical expertise. Fascism promotes state control of industry. New Deal-style technocracy advocates government intervention and technical solutions. These ideologies share common elements: planning, efficiency, technical expertise over market forces. This transformation surrounds us: rising importance of professional management education, growth of regulatory bureaucracies, increasing complexity requiring specialized skills. The future belongs not to those who own, but to those who know how to run things. Early capitalism saw owners managing their businesses, but modern corporations have shattered this model. Complex operations now require specialized management separate from ownership. Today's corporations contain four distinct groups: managers, organizing production; finance executives, focused on costs and profits; finance capitalists, overseeing investments; and passive stockholders, collecting dividends. Only management is technically necessary for production. The others are dispensable operationally. This creates fundamental conflicts. Managers depend on production processes, not capitalist property relations, while finance capitalists' existence hinges entirely on preserving capitalism. The shift of control from capitalists to managers may seem absurd given the immense wealth of families like the Rockefellers and Morgans, yet feudal lords once appeared equally unassailable before merchants gradually seized control. The process accelerates. Many big bourgeoisie have withdrawn from active participation, spending time on yachts and charity rather than industry. Professional executives increasingly make crucial corporate decisions. Since World War I, only one new family has joined America's first-rank capitalists, a stark contrast to the regular emergence of industrial fortunes in the 19th century. A ruling class's inability to assimilate fresh blood signals approaching downfall. Government extends into the economy through two channels: nationalizing entire sectors and controlling others via commissions and agencies. Managers, technical experts, and administrators direct these enterprises, determining resource allocation and operations while restricting capitalist property rights. In a managerial economy, government enterprises operate fundamentally differently than capitalist ones. This isn't state capitalism, because there are no capitalists, nor state socialism, because it won't be classless. The managers controlling the state form a new ruling class with special privileges and preferential distribution. Politically, sovereignty shifts from parliaments to administrative boards and bureaus. Russia illustrates this. After 1917, the Soviet Congress initially held sovereignty, but within years lost all power to party institutions and administrative bodies. Totalitarianism differs from previous dictatorships by controlling all life aspects: business, art, science, education, religion, recreation, morality. Modern communication and transportation technology make such extensive control possible. Dictatorships commonly emerge during major transitions, and the present era parallels feudalism's shift to capitalism. Managers face a triple battle: against capitalists clinging to the old order, against masses resisting class rule, and against each other for dominance. During transition, political rule concentrates under dictatorship. Once accomplished, historical analogy suggests totalitarianism will yield to democracy, though not resembling capitalist democracy. We stand at a crossroads where expertise has quietly supplanted ownership as power source. The managers didn't storm the gates. They became indispensable through mastering increasingly complex systems. The future belongs not to those who own the most, but to those controlling coordination mechanisms and expertise. In boardrooms, bureaucracies, and technical institutes, a new ruling class consolidates power, not through revolution, but through accumulating indispensable knowledge. The question isn't whether this transformation will complete itself, but how we'll navigate a world where technical control trumps democratic will and market forces alike.